Good morning, and especially welcome to people here for the first time. If there are people here for the first time, I think so. Also like to express appreciation for our temple founders who are here, and express appreciation to our teachers. Some of you actually met His Holiness Dalai Lama. Some of you actually met Jada Rinpoche. Some of you have actually met Gyatso Chodron Rinpoche. Some of you maybe in a previous life met my root teacher, Geshe Drone. So an appreciation of all my teachers and perhaps teachers to come, right? We shouldn't say we're all done. There's more. Okay, so, and thank you for all members and supporters for being here today. I'm going to talk on a topic that you all know about, Bodhisattva Path, the heroic being path, translated into Tibetan, they say heroic being. Sometimes we say wisdom being. Bodhisattva literally means in Sanskrit awake. Bodhi is awake, and sattva is being. A key part of the Bodhisattva practice is what's called the accumulation or the generating of merit. And that's a very misunderstood term because English merit makes me think of merit badge. The accumulation of positive qualities, the accumulation of good karma, the accumulation of joy and wisdom is an essential part of our path. So I'm going to give a talk today, on punya. P-U-N-Y-A, for those Sanskrit scholars, punya. When we're practicing in a group like this, when we're on retreat, when we're around incredible beings, of course we feel the support, we feel the inspiration. But lots of times when we're alone or we're having the challenges of daily life, then we feel alone again, and where did our practice go? This is remedied, in a sense, by the fact that we actually create resource states. It's one word I call for punya. We create an internal holding of all the positive good we've done. None of the good we do, none of our goodness, none of the positive qualities are ever destroyed in our lineage and our Dharma teaching. This is really important. The belief sometimes that we've ruined it all and we're broken and we can't fix ourselves is widely believed sometimes. It's actually believed sometimes in some Buddhist groups, you know, where they say, oh, you're finished. Or sometimes in some texts, and lamas have been known to say, traditional lamas saying, one moment of anger can wipe out kalpas of goodness, right? You know, in traditional Indian Tibetan societies, unless you kind of, you know, jump on someone like that, they don't think you're serious. But so that has to be contextualized. You actually can't wipe out merit and roots of goodness. You can mess up your present situation quite a bit, but you can't wipe it out. Also, there's absolutely no problem, misunderstanding, sin, screwed upness that can't be liberated. This is important too, very fundamentally. There's nothing that can't be forgiven or worked through. So even in our tradition, we say there's even a benefit to misknowledge, delusions, and bad karma that it can be purified. So that's a benefit, right? Like that. The Bodhisattva trainings, you know, traditionally are being, you know, developing our internal peace and calm and wisdom and then benefiting others. But a big part of our practice actually is dedicating our practice to others. So that's why we do the prayers ahead of time, and particularly seven limb prayer, that we dedicate and make offerings. And then at the end, we dedicate and make offerings. So the main part of the talk today is about this dedication of punya. In some schools of Dharma, some belief systems, we're totally separate beings, and no one else can really help anybody else. Certainly in some texts and talks by the Buddha, you could be led to that conclusion, because the Buddha said many times that we're freed by our own actions, and we're enslaved by our own actions. And then also, you know, even the Buddhas can't eliminate what's called, you know, merited karma. Merited karma means once you start a certain situation, once the arrow has left the bow, it's going to have some kind of fruition. But this isn't meaning that we're not connected to such an extent that we can support and influence and benefit in great ways someone's practice. Why is this? Because even though we do have our own individual mind stream, we're actually all completely connected. I've been talking lately about interdependence as inter-independence. So that people get the idea that we're not just one huge moss out there, but we are threads that make up a garment, or we are jewels that reflect each other. So we're interdependent. So our practice and the results of our practice does influence, can influence, and in Bodhisattva practice works to the benefit of others. So in our practice, yes, we can actually make prayers for others, dedicate our practice to others, and others can benefit from that, not just in this life, and but also in many lives. It's difficult growing up in a modern scientific society to accept or even, you know, have experience of the complete ongoing nature of awareness and life, past and future lives. But some of us here, maybe all of us here, have had glimpses that that's possible. We've had glimpses where we knew things happening maybe far away to someone we cared about, or we had some kind of prophecy or prescience, or, well, we're all still here. So I think if we look deeply into our practice, we may find traits and tendencies that connect with certain places and certain people, and we have certain recognitions. Great teachers can remember their past lives to extent, and they can even predict or influence where they're going next. But even after several years, maybe four or five, it's difficult to remember. And even when you've grown up in the worldview, it's still hard to accept, you know, because it feels so real that we're very separate and, you know, this is it. Maybe the movie Kundun came out like 15 years ago. I can't remember Martin Scorsese's. And it followed the viewpoint of you know, the biography of Dalai Lama, and had an interesting scene about how Dalai Lama, as a young child, I don't know, maybe just a year and a half, two, was picking out objects from previous life, and all the objects look kind of alike, like cane and his damru, his drum, and mala, so forth. So that the committee looking for him was convinced, okay, we're taking this boy from Amdo back to Lhasa. But I think even then his mom was kind of like, okay, this is really great, but I know where he came from. So we'll see. And the movie followed him back until he you know, was installed in the Patala and also summered in the Norbalinka Palace, Summer Palace. And the scene in the movie showed where the Dalai Lama is a young boy, maybe he was four or five. He said, my teeth. He went looking for his teeth. And he said, they're in this cabinet. And his attendant and his mom were there. And they go, that's nutty. But Dalai Lama insisted. And so they took out, you know, they found a brocade like this and opened it up. And there was his teeth, right? Anybody see that scene? Yes. Yeah, you know, and then you could, it was great, you know, then his mom just went, oh, wow, you know, just like, whew, really got it, you know, like that. And then his attendant also like, you know, sometimes we need those confirmations. Sometimes those really make a difference. We don't always need those, but if we look carefully, many times we've had those kind of experiences. It's interesting that a person who played his cook, his attendant in that movie, Losang Somten's a teacher in Philadelphia. He also does many mandalas. So he's a friend of mine, but I haven't seen him. Someday when he's in California, we'll have him come again. So the idea that we can influence each other and help each other and dedicate our merit is not just for this life, but traditionally also for lives going forward. The other interesting thing about punya is that we gain positive qualities, we gain these resource states, we gain these realizations when we rejoice in someone else's dedicating their practice, and we go, gosh, that's so neat that you're dedicating the fruits of your practice for that person's benefit. I'm so happy you're doing that. We also participate in those fruits. So the person dedicating the fruits of their practice and dedicating and the person experiencing that, if they know about it, and the person even present, all benefit. In the West, sometimes we think if we dedicate the merits and the virtues of our practice, maybe our our levels will go down. So actually, that's samsara thinking. Mahayana thinking, bodhisattva thinking, is actually when we want to share, when we want to dedicate the benefits of our practice, the riches of our practice, then our abilities, our resource states, our virtues, our goodness goes up. So by the willingness to share, the willingness to give it away, it increases. These positive states are also, and I'm going to be a little scholarly, and Yogacara, Chinamatra, philosophy are also stored in the alaya consciousness, the alaya vijnana. Alaya means like a storehouse, right? Everybody knows the word himalaya. Him means snow in Sanskrit. Alaya means storehouse. So it's not just that there's some positive potentials going forward, but that all the qualities, all the memories, all the experiences are actually stored. It's really weird, but there are people that can remember what they had for breakfast like 17 years ago. I was listening to some show on NPR last year, and, you know, there's... it's just unbelievable, you know, just like somebody, like people can do complicated math in their head. So our idea is that all the positive qualities not only can be used for the benefit of others, but also they are actually stored. Hopefully they're organized in a really kind of good data system, you know. So as bodhisattvas, we know how to retrieve and use those. And additionally, with the practice of dedication, as bodhisattvas, we can ask also that someone's negative karma, you know, ripen on us, right? This is the practice generally of sending and taking. It's called Tonglen. We can say, you know, I dedicate all the benefits of my practice fruition to you, and may I take on all the negativities. This sounds scary again, doesn't it, for some people? But actually, by being willingness to take it on, our sense of buoyancy and positive potentials and safety is increased. So the other day I was interviewing someone who wants to join Midway Health, has a background in Ayurveda, and she says, "Oh, Lama, where are you going after death?" And I go, "I'm going to Naraka, the hell realms." She says, "Why aren't you going to Devaloka?" I said, "Devaloka, plenty." So bodhisattvas, we don't need to go to the human realms necessarily. We should start out going to Naraka, right? Why would bodhisattvas just want to, you know? Then after that, I'll come back to Sacramento. But you know. So the dedication of merit, dedication of punya, dedication of these positive qualities is something that we're doing regularly in our practice before and afterwards. We may not, you know, feel the results right away, but I think it's important to bring those into our actual lived experience. So it isn't just a mental event. In other words, when we're doing the prayers, when we're saying to somebody else, you know, hope your life is fruitful and hope you're becoming happy, check in to how it feels in our body. Check in to, like, right now. This is the Tantra style of the practice. Mahayana style is seeing the vision and developing the intention, right? tantra styles, we want to feel it in our bodies, in our awareness right now. We want to take time to go, wow, that really feels good from the tip here to very toes. Take a moment to feel it, so it's not just vision, it's not just intention, but also it's embodied. This is tantra style. Tantra style is, we're doing a practice called the two accumulations in English, the accumulations of positive qualities, punya and wisdom. And with the two accumulations, we not only get the wisdom body, Dharmakaya, but we also get the rupa body, the form body of a Buddha. The form body of the Buddha includes this Nirmanakaya, you know, this body, and Sambhogakaya, the imaginal body. Because we're practicing and dedicating positive qualities, bodhisattvas can manifest and come back in actual helping, right? So we're not just saying, well, I hope your illness is okay. That's intention and vision. But you know, I'm willing to stop by the hospital, or I'm willing to bring you some food, right? We need a body to do that, right? So we're doing prayers for these two accumulations, so that not only now but in the future we can manifest our activities. Very advanced teachers actually can manifest a number of different form bodies. So, you know, kind of like bilocate, something like that. Is that the right term? that's why a teacher can be teaching from a pure land and at the same time be teaching on earth, like this earth, right? So that's the same time the Buddha can be teaching at you know, Eagle Peak, and also be teaching Kalachakra Tantra in South India at the same time. From a Buddhist point of view, this is not metaphor, actually. It goes beyond belief, okay? But, you know, his, you know, scientific belief, but it's not metaphor. So in Lotus Sutra, bodhisattvas appear from all different Buddha fields, appear out of the earth, come from times far away, from times in the future, and Buddhist metaphysics, because of the nature of interdependence, these are not metaphors. This can actually happen. It's weird, but you don't practice until you experience it. Okay, you know, that's the Buddhist idea. You don't have to believe it, you know, but practice until you experience it. So I want to take a little time for some comments and questions and complaints, and Stephen has one right now. That was quick. So.
Well, first of all, I want to talk to you in private, but I also have this idea that in Zen, reincarnation is easier for my mind, which is pretty Western, has been pretty much Western. Mm-hmm. It's easier for me if you get this distinguished teacher figure, and he reincarnates, he goes up into ultimate reality, and then back down into all beings, as opposed to a distinguished teacher figure finding an heir, a single heir, because why is that? I guess because of this merit, because it seems to me that that's pigeonholing merit and making it too too discreet. Merit, in my mind, should be more universal. So it should be, it should go up to the absolute and then back down to all relatives. But how is it going to be that view because of the Tolkien, which you kind of talked about with the Dalai Lama?
That's a good question, and you have a strong voice, so maybe everyone heard, so we're not passing out the microphone. So, when we're dedicating positive potentials, how is it that we can dedicate just to an individual in the sense of, taking a definite rebirth or something? Why not just, say everyone can share it? Actually, we do both at the same time. Yeah, so we become universal. We become a universal bodhisattva, and we also take a particular form at the same time. The Tolku system, Tolku in Tibetan means nirmanakaya, means manifestation, like this body. Was known in India, of course, but became important in Tibet because of various great teachers who made it very conscious predictions. The first actually recognized Tolku that made big impact, of course, was the Karmapa. So. The present Karmapa, who's staying in Gudo Monastery, where Jata Rinpoche is 17th, and the Dalai Lama is 14th. So that's important to know that we can be universal and individual at the same time without limiting either one. And that kind of style is really explained in Lotus Sutra and particularly in Flower Garden Sutra, like that Hawaiian school, where you can be both one and many at the same time, like that. There's a lot to say about this, so we will talk some more. But yes, we do both at the same time. It's weird. Hello?
I have a question about taking on someone else's karma, bad karma. Does that mean that we suffer on that? And if we are not equipped for that, how do we get there? And also, does that, I've always been thinking that we take a subset of bad karma close to us, we can teach us, or are we keeping that lesson away from us?
Yeah, good question. An American Zen master that I liked a lot, who started the Hartford Street Zen Center, Isan Dorsey, said, "You get what you deserve, whether you deserve it or not." we're on the planet, so actually we're fully experiencing everyone's karma already. It's a total joke that we can kind of just separate ourselves out. So when we say yes to it, we're able to work with it with wisdom and compassion. It doesn't mean we don't purify it, or we just let negative energy just run over us and flatten us. When we say take on, it means we're willing to relate with it skillfully. So that's why we have to do a lot of the energy practices that I've been teaching in the workshops, how to do the work with the winds and the channels and the drops, how to do the actual practices. Because to do things in the world and say, okay, I want to relate with difficult people. I want to relate with difficult situations. I want to, you know, transform this business or household or relationship. Then we do need a lot of energy. And there are kind of maybe bodhisattvas, so to speak, that sometimes, you know, take on too much. They don't ask for support. They don't have the support of Lama, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, and then they do tip over, right? So when we say take on the karma, it means we're willing to work with the situation. It doesn't mean martyrdom or that we're making ourselves a sacrifice. So Buddha Dharma is not a martyrdom sacrifice model, although, you know, there are periods where in Buddhist history where people have made sacrifices, where it's been skillful means to do it. But when we say take on someone's karma, what we're saying, I'm willing to relate intelligently with it. Yeah. Because actually you're taking it on unintelligently anyway. Right? You are. So let's do it smart from the center. Yeah. La la la. It's easy. Sometimes you can transfer illnesses, you know, sometimes you can, you know, take on, you actually can experience, people can experience, you know, some of the actual physical side like that too. You know, I know when my children have been sick, you know, I just feel like saying, you know, just let it ripen on me, right? We know that experience, or someone we love, like, you know, you've broken your arm. You know, I'd rather have my arm broken so you can be happy, right? And we all know that kind of experience. You know, so, you know, start out small. Just say, you know, you've got a hangnail, so take that on. And then, right? Start out really small. And then we build up. We're going to take a break in a second. The last thing that we go over a lot in Lotus Sutra, and it's translated into English, called skillful means. Upaya means, you know, how we fix something. And virtuous or skillful is kusala. So the bodhisattvas have to train themselves in these different trainings so that we're doing things skillfully. We must have techniques, we must have skill, we must have skillful means to help ourselves and liberate others. So that is, after we develop the intention and the motivation and the vision, then the majority of the Dharma practice is, you know, developing the yogas and methods to actually help others. So that's why there are so many teachings in Dharma, there's so many Dharma paths, because there's so many people with different personality characteristics, there's so many new situations. So realization in Dharma, you know, is universal in the sense we realize the nature of interdependence, emptiness, and bodhicitta, and loving kindness. But having realized that, it doesn't mean we, you know how to, you know, fix the computer or, you know, program the VCR, right? Dalai Lama has to learn the same way, right? Has to take class and learn skillful means. So that's partially what we're doing today. I'd like to take a break and give a short guided meditation when we come back. So it's wonderful in this temple, we can kind of talk between on the break. Isn't that nice? You can visit. It's okay. So we'll be back in a moment. Yeah. sometimes in the West we think that the only meditation Buddhists do are just being mindful of our breathing. Mindful breathing is an important practice, but actually the majority of practices involve some kind of visualization or contemplation, some kind of narrative of some kind, some kind of intention. So the practice I'd like to suggest we do briefly this afternoon is a practice of dedicating our punya, dedicating our positive qualities, the fruition of our practice to someone. It goes without saying we're giving it to all beings, but in our tradition, we start out with someone we really do care about, and that's Tantra style. We start with the positive desire. So when we start the practice of dedicating our practice, then we develop the heartfelt wish that they benefit from what we do today, that they become free and happy. And we imagine them and see them as free and happy too. So we imagine that it's come to fruition, even if our logical samsaric mind doesn't think it will happen. In our Buddha nature, it does happen. If you can't think of any human being, you can think of animal, or you can think of other beings too, right? I think someone asked the Dalai Lama at some point, like, can I dedicate towards my computer or something like that. So, yeah, we can. This is a neat thing. You know, you can dedicate your practice to rocks and trees and the natural world too. That's entirely possible. So, if those people that want to can start out just briefly becoming aware of your breath so that you're centered in the body. You can start that way and then you know, do this imaginative practice and feel the experience in your body of wishing others to be free and happy, and that they do become free and happy and that they can have the benefits of our practice. If you're doing Tantra style practice, you can assume the form of your idam, of your chosen Buddha, like Tara or Chenrezi or Vajogini, so forth, and do the practice from that point of view. At least I do the practice from the point of view of being bodhisattva, meaning that you recognize from the start your indestructible Buddha nature, and that you are capable of making effect in the world. That kind of confidence builds tremendous positive energy. So we have, you know, 20 minutes. Can we do it? Okay. Also, like, if you want to sit and drift too, that's okay. I mean, sometimes you need that. I just need a break. So I'm dedicating my practice to all those people that just need a break. Okay. All right. I believe tomorrow night we're also having class on Lotus Sutra, so there'll be more. We'll be talking about more in depth, goes for means of Bodhisattva, and a little bit that I didn't touch on today. There's a difference between the accumulation of punya and karma, actually. So a lot of misunderstanding there. And in our tradition, bodhisattvas eventually don't create more karma, but they create more punya and more paramitas. So maybe it sounds kind of esoteric, but it's also practical. So some of you I'll see tomorrow night also. In Tantra, the greatest thing we can definitely give is our enjoyment, right? So we want to enjoy the day, and you can dedicate that. Even nice pleasure from a piece of chocolate, you can dedicate. May everyone have this wonderful taste of bliss from chocolate. Or maybe it's an apple for others, right? Okay, you can dedicate even your food in our tradition. Isn't that nice? Okay, we're ready for dedication. Mm-hmm.